Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinels, J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward podcast. Joining you once again, the Milwaukee Bucks have a 2-1 lead on the Atlanta Hawks in the Eastern Conference Finals. Things are going very, very well, particularly after kind of a disappointing Game 1 loss. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Point Forward podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and on the other line, he's in Atlanta, baby! Jim Ozarski, living his best life. He caught Game 3. Read everything he has from that game at jsonline.com. He'll be at Game 4 tomorrow. And Jim, this series kind of going like I think we both thought it would. Now, Game 1 obviously went to the Hawks at Pfizer Forum. Milwaukee did not play its best, but still only lost by 3 points despite kind of one of those trademarked poor shooting performances. They come back with a mighty vengeance in Game 2, dominate by 34 points, and then Chris Middleton takes over in the fourth quarter as the Bucks take that 2-1 series lead in Atlanta. I go back to what we said at the beginning. I mean, even after Game 1, I still kind of felt this way. I don't see how Atlanta has the horses to pull this off. I feel like I just, outside of shooting performances that I don't think we're going to see from Atlanta, especially with Bogdanović, you know, not at 100%, I think the Bucks are – I don't see how they lose this series. I feel like this is definitely going the way Milwaukee has got it. Anything give you pause in what you've seen so far?
No, not with Trae Young rolling that ankle on a referee.
For sure.
You know, that was, look, we talked about this on a previous podcast, JR, with sort of the other injuries around the league in this playoffs. And look, the Bucks lost a starter, but, you know, it was Dante DiVincenzo, and it was in the first round. You know, they've been fortunate. The teams around them, the teams they've been playing, have been less lucky. I think Drew Holiday said it best at, I think when Harden got hurt or Irving, and he said, sucks for them, bad luck for them, but good for us, you know? And, you know, that was the hope, you know? If Young doesn't get hurt, Game 3 maybe goes Atlanta's way. You know, they were up 7 with 7 minutes to go without him. And he just, you know, when he came back, he hit a 3. And then it all, the adrenaline wore off, you know. But they had a lead with him. They were kind of doing the things, JR, that they did in Game 1 to squeak that out. And, yeah, look, if Young plays, he's clearly going to be limited and not the same guy. And, yeah, I think the Bucks, this is, to me, JR, this is over in 5. I think it'll be a clinch at Pfizer Forum, you know, in Game 5.
Obviously I glossed over the Young injury that is crucial for Atlanta. And the interesting thing, I think, and I haven't read a lot of game coverage for Game 3 from Atlanta's point of view, but I'd be curious how they react to how the fourth quarter was handled by the Hawks. I mean, Trae Young was off the floor, still recovering from that ankle tweak, and the Bucks weren't gaining ground. In fact, Atlanta was making, you know, creating some separation there in the early part of the fourth quarter. Young comes back on the floor, and the Bucks completely take advantage. And I don't know if you could really chalk that up to Trae Young not being 100%, or if it's just a newfound intensity by the Bucks, but Trae Young on the floor was not a difference maker. And maybe at 100% health, he is a difference maker. I do still maintain that the guy could score 50 points and the Bucks would still feel comfortable with that, could still win the game. I think we saw that in Game 1. They're a possession away in a game where Trae Young scored, you know, 48 points. So I feel like the Bucks can weather that particular storm, and Atlanta doesn't have more in the tank beyond that guy. Obviously, if he's not able to contribute offensively, it's curtains, of course. But I don't know how you think of that. Like, I do feel like the Bucks kind of figured something out. Certainly Game 2, it showed that with the way they defended Young and kept him almost completely mitigated. 15 points, 9 turnovers. Game 3, even with Young back on track, I don't think the Bucks mind that. I think that's okay with them because nobody else is going to really be able to step up and add that offense the way maybe John Collins did in Game 1. Am I crazy or is that what you're seeing too?
No, I mean, I think it's very Durant-ish where, you know, Trae Young is and can be that good, especially if he's hitting 30-footers, you know, which is such a low percentage shot. And, yeah, I mean, he was on his way. I think, 32 points after 3 quarters in Game 3. Yeah, you mentioned 48. Now, obviously, Game 2, not as effective. But the Bucks could win either way, especially game three, JR. You know, John Collins got into foul trouble. He was, 22 minutes of just really sparse action. Clint Capella, wasn't able to have the same sort of offensive factor. So it reminds me a lot of Brooklyn, just less sexy. Like it's Young can get his, but the Bucks will win as long as John Collins doesn't have 20 and 10 like he did in game one, right? Or Clint Capella doesn't have a double-double with a bunch of offensive rebounds. If they're just sort of existing in the Young orbit but not really, participating, if you will, yeah, there's really no issue there. And, game three was shaping up to go down to the wire for sure before the Young injury. Danilo Gallinari had come off the bench and provided some definite needed scoring at times. But you're right, Kevin Huerter didn't score a lot, but had a couple blocks, had a bunch of assists. I mean, so they had a couple guys step up, but just they're not, again, it's like JR's like Brooklyn. They don't have Bogdanovich has been hurt, clearly. Like, they don't have enough other guys right now. And yeah, I mean, but you're right. The Bucks game two was huge. Game two was huge. If some for some reason the Bucks hadn't made adjustments, hadn't really got annoyed and just stomped on the Hawks, maybe game three goes differently, even with Young getting hurt. But they did, and they are now set for a finals berth, in my view.
I'm intrigued by the minutes that we've seen from some of these guys. Brook Lopez was kind of, I think, I don't want to say the scapegoat, but when Trae Young was able to hit the number of floaters he was, a lot of fans pointed to Brook Lopez and specifically the way that he defends with the drop, the drop coverage, giving that open floater to Trae Young. Then in game two, again, that kind of went away. And I thought, okay, well, Brook Lopez, they figured something out defensively. But then game three, Pat Connaughton is the guy who's on the floor more so than Brook Lopez. In fact, Connaughton overall has more minutes in this series than Lopez. So it seemed like even though whatever they did worked in game two, the Bucks still maybe, moving in a different direction to try to defend that. Young was still able to hit some floaters before he got hurt in game three. But we saw a ton from Pat Connaughton. And even though his offensive output has been minimal, he has sort of stepped into that Dante DiVincenzo role. And we could also talk about Bobby Portis, whose defense is not of the same caliber, but he also offensively has given them the spark that they needed. A guy who did not play in 3-4-5, games 3-4-5, or I should say 5-6-7 of the Brooklyn series. Here he is playing major, major minutes and being a very, a very key factor on offense and energy-wise. For the first time, the Bucks bench seems to be showing signs of life. And we're still waiting for Bryn Forbes. We're still waiting for, I guess, anybody else. Thanasis gets his couple moments in the sun. But Portis and Connaughton have been, I think, maybe the thing that is separating Milwaukee from Atlanta in sort of a global sense in this series is that the Bucks finally have two guys off the bench who are able to contribute at least on one end of the floor and in many cases both ends.
Yeah, there was, well, I mean, look, JR, we spent a lot of time talking about where did Bobby Portis go in the Brooklyn series, and it wasn't a good matchup for him. That was the series where Mike Budenholzer decided that it was time to lean on the five starters and or the three, four starters, and Pat Connaughton kind of filling in there as the fifth guy. We knew it would be different this series against Atlanta. They're just not the same team. They're not the same team offensively, meaning, the requirements of Portis are different and suit his game better. Now, game one, again, credit Atlanta. They took advantage of what Milwaukee was doing to win the game. Bobby Portis eventually didn't play the fourth quarter after providing some spark. Brook Lopez only played 20 minutes. Bucks switched it up in game two, JR. And I mean, that was it. The drop defense was still there. It was just played differently. Brook Lopez was far more active, physically changing shots, redirecting shots. Portis comes in, and rather than asking him to just straight drop, which is not a strength of his, and he has said it, instead he was attacking or blitzing, off that pick and roll and using his length and size to sort of force Trae Young to get rid of the shot as opposed to waiting for, Trae Young to back Bobby to the essentially to the net. That's not a strength of his. So credit to Mike Budenholzer for kind of listening to his guys, seeing that, and changing things up. And look, JR, game three, the Bucks didn't have a lead until 82-80, under 2 minutes left in the third quarter. And Bobby Portis gave them that lead. There were a couple stretches in that comeback, long comeback it took them, whereas him and Giannis and Chris, or him and Giannis scoring all the points to get them back into, level, make the scoreboard level. So, and yeah, Connaughton, he's, for better or worse, in Bucks fans' view, I mean, he is the guy right now. I mean, PJ Tucker starts, but Connaughton is the one he's the sixth man now. He's coming in to kind of switch up on defense and be a big active body. And I guess credit to the big three, JR. They're able to kind of play four-man offense. I kind of teased the 76ers about that, right? With Ben Simmons. I mean, PJ Tucker and Pat Connaughton aren't scoring, but they're doing sort of all these other things that are leading to points, right? Like they're getting offensive rebounds, they're assisting, so they're not totally MIA. And yeah, it's working.
We've gone a long time now without talking about Chris Middleton, and we will talk about Chris Middleton's fourth quarter. But before we leave Bobby Portis, what did you think of game two? I think one of the takeaways, one of the things I might remember from this series, are the fans chanting "Bobby, Bobby." It's this is a guy who's in his first year with the Bucks, and he does a lot of, I guess, I don't want to say dirty work, because I don't actually think that's his game. I think his game is more like legitimate insta offense when he comes in. He does fight for some rebounds and stuff, but I'm amazed with the way that he has sort of endeared himself to the Milwaukee fan base. He's not a rah-rah guy per se. He's not a big personality off the court that you would think would maybe draw that kind of attention. But fans just love this guy, and I think he could run for office right now, coming off the bench. I don't know if it was disappearing or being disappeared in the Nets series and then coming back, that everybody sort of rallied around this guy. He's always, though, kind of been pretty popular over the course of this season in Milwaukee. What do you remember from that? That was a pretty uplifting moment. I mean, that felt really good, I would imagine, as a Bucks fan, with that lead growing and growing, getting over 40 points, and Bobby Portis being a big part of it.
Yeah, I mean, live, I'm sure it's happened somewhere, JR, but I've never seen a basketball player ask for a curtain call, especially after not, scoring 50 points or hitting the game winner or whatever. Like, yeah, he was just out there.
He just did his job.
Just did his
That's all.
job, and they would not let it go. I think he appreciated it, but didn't really want to do anything about it. But I think his teammates were kind of getting at him, like, hey man, stand up or acknowledge the crowd. And they did. And it is a unique love affair, because I think, JR, you talk about, personality, like Thanasis is that one. Like Thanasis is the jump off the bench, tear off your warm-ups, and run around like a wild man, and do a bunch of stuff that gets people crazy. And don't get me wrong, I mean, I've dubbed him the Ultimate Warrior, entrance on Bucks Twitter, because that's kind of what it is. People lose their minds. But you're right, like the Bobby's it's interesting. I don't know if anybody will be able to explain it. I think and I'm sure at this point, JR, for finals coverage, some TV station will run around asking people why they like Bobby Portis. And I'm sure it'll just be like, hey, I like this game. I like his attitude. I think he's tough, which is all true. And his teammates love it. But yeah, it was really cool. It was, I had never seen anything like that. It wasn't for Giannis. It wasn't for Chris or Drew. It was for Bobby Portis, and I think that's a cool thing.
So let's talk about Chris Middleton. He continues to come up with major shots and big moments, and on in game three, it was the entire fourth quarter. 20 points in the fourth quarter, first Bucks playoff performance of that variety in 25 years. And you look at his overall numbers in this series, they're not great. He's shooting 29% from 3-point range, 43% overall, 44% overall. He really you know, he does get criticism. We've talked about that a million times. He does get criticism for not always rising to the occasion. I happen to think that's a little preposterous. I feel like he routinely rises to the occasion. And even when he's not performing at his best over the course of, you know, over the course of these playoffs, he wasn't spectacular in the Nets series. He was fine, but below, I guess, what you could have expected from him during a regular season. And through the first two and three quarters of this Hawks series, he was, I won't say a non-factor, but he wasn't at his best by any means. And then he shows up in the fourth quarter, just an absolute takeover. Give me a sense of what you saw in that fourth quarter from him, and just, you know, again, we've talked about this before, but just him showing up in a pretty important spot when they absolutely needed him, he came through for them.
Yeah, it's I mean, it reminds me a little bit, JR, some of the conversations we had in the regular season, you know, where you have 28. 27, and it was like, it's kind of ho-hum, but like, that's, you know, really good. And clearly 38 in an Eastern Conference final, 20 in the fourth, that's a bigger stage. Like, you're, you know, our friends at the national outlets pay attention to that. There's only four, like, you can't not notice Chris Middleton when there's only four teams left. So I think it's an extension of who he is and what he's done, but also I think it shows that, you know, going back to what we talked about with Connaughton and Tucker kind of not being point scorers, you know, the Bucks need that. You know, what have we talked about when they've lost? It's Chris Middleton didn't shoot very well, right? You know, yep. He didn't, maybe he scored 18, 20 points, but it took 23 shots. Like, that's, you know, if the Bucks are going to win a championship, JR, like, he got to do this. Maybe not 38 and 20 and a quarter, but he's got to be that guy. And, you know, game three, it was, I'll get to me, JR, I think the most credit isn't so much that he scored 11 of 13 points in this stretch and 17 to basically end the game in the middle of the fourth quarter. I think to me, JR, was he got himself back in the game mentally. He had to go sit down in the third quarter with four fouls. We were actually talking about it on Press Row, that it's like, oh, here's a Chris is mad at the officials game. You know, he's mad he's not getting calls. He's mad he's getting whistled on the other end. You know, he's just going to keep kind of shooting and complaining. And Budenholzer kind of joked. He's like, well, you know, we're out there whining and complaining. And he's like, Chris was part of that. Yet he didn't let that carry into the fourth. Because, JR, I think we've seen that too this year at times and in his career, right? Where you see the hands go up and the shrug emoji, and then the shots don't go in, you know, as long as he's still. So I think him sort of collecting himself after he was pulled with four fouls, and then to be able to do that, I think that was an underlying part of the score, was sort of, you know, keeping his composure, the team keeping their composure. Because that was, you know, again, that was an all-time performance, as you said.
And now, again, I mentioned earlier, we've gone a long time without talking about Chris Middleton. We've gone an even longer time without talking about Giannis Antetokounmpo, who just continues to just flat out dominate. I mean, you look at his numbers, routinely you're seeing tweets after every game, like, he's the only player to have done this or this many games in a row to have this stat line. I mean, quite honestly, I didn't think game three was his best game. It was kind of continuing a trend where he's missing a lot of shots close to the hoop. Atlanta's doing, I guess, what they can to make it hard on him, but it seems like he can really get to wherever he wants in the paint. And if the shots are going in, you know, he's going to score 50, right? And yet, you know, after game three, even saying, well, it wasn't maybe his best game, you look at the stat line and it's crazy. And what he does is crazy. I don't know if I guess I thought maybe in game three the Hawks had started to figure out something to slow him down, to really deny him the ball. A lot of quick hands, a lot of fumbles. You know, Danilo Gallinari is getting in there trying to steal the ball away. The rookie whose name is going to completely elude me, Okongwu, I believe. Is it Onyeka Okongwu? I mean, he showed up for a little bit against Giannis. They seem to have a moment where they could stop him. But he gets whatever he wants over the course of this series. And outside of Capella, they don't have the size to match up with him. They don't really have anybody who can match up with him. So I don't even have a good question. It's more like, let's meditate again on the greatness that is Giannis Antetokounmpo. But like, it's funny. Yesterday was the 8th anniversary of his draft selection, and I wrote something for JSOnline.com, looking at a podcast that had really detailed how the Atlanta Hawks were the other team that really, really wanted Giannis and flew him to Atlanta even before he went to New York for the draft. And they were trying to be as secretive as they could. Like, they were trying to get him to an airplane gate without having him walk through the concourses so people didn't know that he was in town and, you know, he was going through a back door to get the physical. Like, they were so in on him, they didn't want anybody to know how in on him they were. But the Bucks had the higher pick in that draft. They take him at 15. Hawks weren't until 17. And, oh boy, that sliding door for Atlanta has got to look pretty interesting right now. I don't know where the ceiling is for this guy. It's just the greatness is so run-of-the-mill at this point. It really is something to watch, Jim.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's averaging 30, 10, and 6.
Right. That's ridiculous. And it still doesn't register like it should.
And he's shooting, you know, 59% from the field. You know, he's shooting 60.
And a block per game, too, while he's at it.
60% from the free throw line, which I know is not great. But, you know, at the very least, it's an improvement over the Brooklyn series. It's, you know, and for whatever reason, you know, he finds a rhythm and makes, you know, 3 or 4 at times. No, you're right. You know, I'll give Clint Capella some credit on Giannis missing around the rim when he's not just dunking it. Capella's really good he's a really good shot blocker. You know, I don't know if Capella made the all defensive third team, but if he wasn't, like, he was right kind of in that conversation. So I'll give the Hawks credit there. But yeah, and that was clear from the beginning, JR, that they didn't have an answer for him. I think it was almost like the opposite of the young Durant conversation. It was like, well, Giannis is going to score 35, 40. That's fine. Let's just make sure no one else goes off. And, you know, in game one, as we talked about, that was kind of the case. Game three, Jrue Holiday, you know, he had 12 assists, but did not shoot it well. Brooke Lopez didn't score double digits. I mean, it was Bobby Portis, Giannis, and Chris. And Chris scored, as you said, 20 of his 38 in a fourth. I mean, that's probably can be a winning formula if you're the Hawks. You know, but again, Giannis averaging 6 assists. He's also, you know, not drifting solely into that ISO stuff we saw earlier in the Brooklyn series. You know, he's sort of picking his spots a little better, JR, I think, where, yes, he may score 8 straight points, but it feels more natural in this series than I'd say the Brooklyn series. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah. He's, you know, he came up with an injury, you know, a calf. And Mike Budenholzer said it was second quarter of the game two. Didn't seem any worse for wear in game three. So I guess we should mention it. It's something, you know, that we'll probably have to monitor as he goes until he's off the injury report. But JR, he has been every bit as good as, you know, you'd want your superstar to be.
Now, if we get to the nitpicky portion of the program, I don't know if Jeff Teague can get minutes in an NBA Finals. And I know, I'm sure the reason why Jeff Teague is out there is because, you know, he doesn't want a 6-7-man rotation early in a playoff series. You've got to get your depth guys out there. And Jeff Teague and Mike Budenholzer go way back, and they have a good rapport. And, you know, he was brought here for a reason. But those 6 minutes in game one were pretty ugly. He could not keep up with Trae Young. That was kind of around the time Atlanta was able to make one of their many runs in that game. And that wasn't the difference in the game by any means. But it was definitely a down spot. Has gotten into all three games. Game two, though, it was more, you know, obviously a blowout. Doesn't really matter. In game three, just very, very briefly. I guess if there is a concern here, it's that this bench still doesn't go very deep. You know, Connaughton and Portis, thank goodness they're there, and Bryn Forbes is still going to get his shots as a three-point specialist. To me, that's it. It's 8 guys. And, I mean, you can maybe get a minute or two out of Thanasis or I don't know, I guess Diakite or Wara if you really have to. But I don't think Jeff Teague is going to give you those guard minutes that you need. And consequently, you know, I would be worried about that over the course of a longer series. You know, let's say this series does go longer than we think, or the Suns series, if it is in fact Phoenix, that could easily go 6-7 games. that would still be a concern to me. Do you think that Jeff Teague has more to give, that maybe I'm you know, doubting him more than I probably should, or do you think this is just eight guys and out?
I think it's eight and out to win. You know, look, Mike Budenholzer, I give him credit. Again, it didn't work in game one. He tried. Trae Young took advantage of Jeff Teague. I think that wasn't the right defensive situation for Jeff Teague. Like, for instance, I think doing what the Bucks did in game two, he could have played. Like, he was asked to man up on Trae Young in a drop defense, and they were all exposed. Like, I think if he was with Giannis and switching mm-hmm. on Trae Young, it, you know what I mean? Like, I think he would have looked a little better. So I think it's a combination of, yeah, it's like 5 to 6 minutes, but Budenholzer probably put him in a bad spot in game one. That's my opinion. Now, going forward, maybe he can handle a 38-year-old Chris Paul a little better, you know? But you gotta give your guys a little bit of a breather. And that's why it was important that Bobby Portis has showed up. It's why Bryn Forbes hasn't made any shots, but at least he's out there using up some minutes. But yeah, this is what did John Horst say way back? You know, when you make the decision to push your roster to the top with three max guys, basically that means the three max guys got to play. And yes. They got to play a lot, because the back end of the roster is, you know, Jerz, we talked about this. It's you know, fans getting excited about guys like Austin Rivers and Jeff Teague. Like, those are just dudes, and they're just dudes that nobody wants, right? Like, that's – but the fans get excited because, well, they're the only ones the team can sign.
Heard of them.
Right?
Right.
So, yeah, it's – I think Jeff Teague was put in a bad spot by the coach in game one. So, I think, yes, if – you know, Budenholzer wants to run him out a little bit for game four, you know, and have him switch up top. Well, and look, now Young's going to be hurt. So maybe they don't even need to worry about it. You know, maybe Jeff T can just handle Trae Young now that the guy can't. This is even assuming he plays.
Yeah, we don't know that.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I think in that final series, Jrue Holiday, you'd probably have to like wrestle him to get him off the court, but he is going to need a breather. So, you know, maybe Jeff T gives you a few minutes and, you know, people cheer for him on the parade because he's on the team.
Yeah, as you think about this Bucks team and their eight-man rotation, and John Horst, four of these guys were not here on last year's team, and a fifth, being Pat Connaughton, is a guy that I'm not sure people thought was going to get re-signed. So as you imagine, you know, as you imagine this roster now with eight guys kind of being the central contributors, or definitely being the central contributors, this was a puzzle that was kind of thrown together in very short order. Granted, you have a, you know, transcendent superstar and another all-star on that roster who are coming back. But getting back to Jrue Holiday, he's been a little up and down. Well, you know, very up and down. He obviously struggled offensively in that Brooklyn series, and then seemed to bounce back. Game one, game two of this series, particularly game two, he was awesome. And game three, not so much. Definitely struggled shooting. However, I do feel like you're still getting top-notch defense. You're getting a guy who's, you know, handing out double-digit assists. He's close to 10 assists a game for the three games in this series. He continues to be big time. And I think you're seeing a lot of comparisons with Eric Bledsoe. Eric Bledsoe is a fine, you know, general of the, on the floor and a good defender, a very good defender. Not limited offensively. Right now, Jrue Holiday seems to be fighting it a little bit offensively, but I still think even at the end of the day, you're getting better production overall from Jrue Holiday, and obviously you are in the games where he's on offensively, than you would have with Eric Bledsoe. So I still think this is an upgrade, and as much as Jrue Holiday is fighting it, you saw in game seven of the Nets series, he's not afraid to still take shots and in big moments. So game three might have been a little bit of a backslide, but I still think you're seeing gradual, you know, Jrue Holiday gradually digging himself out of whatever offensive doldrums he was in against Brooklyn.
Yeah, I mean, you know, through what, the first two games, I mean, he had 33 and 15 in game one. I mean, he was really like, I mean, he showed up. Game two, 25. And I mean, he's averaging 20 points and 9.7 assists, which is just, I mean, that, you know, he averaged 9.8 assists in that Heat series. I mean, that's his distribution – has gone way up, you know, which is mitigated, I guess, some of his shooting woes to a degree. You know, he was a 6-assist guy during the regular season. And I think that's made up for it. You know, you add 3 or 4 more assists, you take away a couple points, you know, that's a net positive. And I think defensively, JR, that's, look, I think that has been the biggest thing for him is he's been tasked with, you know, Irving and Durant and Trey and a healthy Trey Young. And that's just a lot, you know, and I think that's why maybe he's such a good fit for this team because Chris Middleton can score 38. Giannis can average 30 and 10 and Drew Holiday can kind of just try to find himself. Oh, by the way, like trying to find yourself while still giving you what 15 and 7 on a bad day, you know? I mean, I know he didn't. I know he didn't hit double figures. He had 12 assists in game 3, 2 steals. You know what I mean? Like, I think, you know, it's probably unfair for Bucks Twitter to call him Drew Bledsoe. Like, that's not. I don't think that's very basketball smart. I mean, I understand it. He's not making a lot of shots, but it's like it's just way different. clearly, JR, it's different because he's playing a ton and the Bucks are winning these games, right? As opposed to a couple years ago.
Yeah, I misspoke. I said especially game 2, but it was that game 1 where he was 33 and 10 assists and took 25 shots, as many shots as Giannis, as anybody on the Bucks in game 1, and hit 14 of them. He cut back to 14 shots in game 2, but he made a very good percentage of them. Game 3, just 2 of 11. So we have seen him, as you're describing, we've seen him less aggressive in finding his own shot and more aggressive in distributing the ball to the point that he can have double-digit assists even on an off night. Offensively, he's still just a tremendous player, and if they win this title, he's going to be a major part of it, and will be he's going to be here for the next 4 years. So the Bucks should feel pretty good about their long term future as well. I don't know how much more I have to say. We're gonna wait and see about the Trae Young injury situation. Obviously that's a big factor. You know, I'm thinking about that calf thing with Giannis. You know, like with only 8 players, you'd hate to have any of them even like playing but sort of injured. You know, there's just not a lot of wiggle room in terms of injuries. We've seen now both the Hawks and the Nets impacted by injuries and potentially how that could affect their prognosis against the Bucks. The Bucks so far have been healthy, knock on wood. But any other thoughts you have before we let you go, return you to the Atlanta scene?
No, I mean, look, as long as we've said this, JR, you know, as long as that calf doesn't turn into a major issue or the Bucks don't roll an ankle. I mean, they've been fortunate. You know, I'd say the Suns on the other side, Chris Paul got hurt with that shoulder against the Lakers. It seemed like it was like, you know, the end of his postseason. Then he got COVID. And yet, you know, he's been back. They've kept winning. I think the Suns and the Bucks now are on a collision course for the NBA Finals. Listeners, go back to our last PFP. I mean, I didn't think the Hawks really had much of a shot in this anyway. So I think for the Bucks, what you want to do is close it out. Clinch the thing at home in game 5. Give yourself, you know, 4 days, 5 days of rest, you know, before the finals. You know, make sure everybody's ready. Give yourself that prep time. So that's my thought. I think it's just I think this Bucks team, JR, is not that they're not capable of sort of losing perspective. I just don't see game 4, you know, Trae Young's, even if he plays, it's just not, his whole game is speed. He even said it after game, JR. He said his blow by is gone. You know, he can't plan off that foot. And that's his whole game. Yeah. You know, he's not a catch and shoot standing. I mean, he can make threes, but that's what, I mean, what is that? What's going to happen there? That's, I don't know. I don't, maybe we're talking later and I'm coming back here for game 6. I just don't see it. I think this Bucks team, you know, sees the blood in the water, for lack of a better phrase. And I don't know. I think Game five at Fiserv Forum, Deer District, downtown Milwaukee. That's I think that's going to be a scene, man.
That would be Thursday night. Game four in Atlanta is Tuesday night. Jim Ozarski will be there. He'll be yelling at the crowd to get them to count 1-1,000, 2-1,000, so that they don't speed up that free throw count. Giannis seems to be enjoying himself. You wrote about that, right? The way that he's sort of handled the visiting fans counting down his free throw time seems to be doing okay with it.
Yeah, he's, you know, for his, I don't know if it affects him. He at least says it doesn't. And he says that's part of the enjoyment process is hearing that stuff from opposing fans. So, hey, in Brooklyn, he made 6 of 7 down the stretch. I think game three, there was a stretch he made 2-3 in a row. So who knows? Maybe their fast counting gets him onto a better rhythm.
He is Jim Ozarski. Find everything he has at jsonline.com. Follow him on Twitter at Jim Ozarski. Let him know what you think of the Point Forward podcast. We will join you again probably sometime early next week. And I don't know if we'll be wrapping up the series. It seems to me somewhat likely that we would be, or maybe we're looking at a game seven. I don't know. It would require some things to go a little differently than how they've gone so far. But thanks for joining us, Jim. We will chat with you again soon one way or another.
All right. Sounds good.
Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Thanks for tuning in. Check out everything we've got, jsonline.com. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward Podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and jsonline.com production.